This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello everyone and welcome back to episode 226 of your favourite Formula One show. Yes, Jamie and I return to discuss what might well have been the most boring Japanese Grand Prix of all time. If that doesn't get you hyped for this week's podcast, I don't know what will. But first and foremost, Jamie, as always, how are we doing, sir?
I'm good. The eagle-eyed among you will notice that I'm not in my usual setup once again. Is it even a usual setup if I'm there, like, less than the majority? Who knows? But I'm at a conference for work, which is very exciting. But it does mean that, for whatever reason, this conference center has really, really bad internet. So I'm currently on the phone to Matt, who's in my ear. And, yes, I don't know how long it will take to upload. So if this doesn't come out until a week on Sunday, it's probably because I'm still uploading the footage. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. But I'm doing well. Sadly, it was not a great race, but we'll talk about it anyway. We're always here.
No, exactly. And I hope, obviously, the audio quality for you guys should be a lot better, but he honestly, talking to Jamie at the moment, sounds like he's on dial-up, which is slightly alarming.
It's very accurate. We are literally on a dial-up phone to each other. So
we're not really on a dial-up phone to each other, but I know what you mean. Of course, obviously, we did do the preview show, didn't we, Friday morning, so we were able to talk about kind of most of the drama from free practice, obviously during that session. Of course, obviously, Jack Doohan, at the time of recording this, still hasn't actually been sacked, which I think is quite surprising. I think if he's going to get sacked anywhere, it's going to be after Jeddah, isn't it now?
Yes.
Obviously, because we're now into the depths of a triple header very early on in the year, it feels like, for a triple header. But there we are.
Also,
and of course, obviously, carry on.
Sorry, Japan to Bahrain in 6 days. Feels a bit ridiculous if you ask me, but never mind.
I love the fact we had Australia to China as back-to-back, but China to Japan wasn't, and Japan to Bahrain is. It does seem very odd.
Yeah,
like,
slightly.
Surely it would have been better bringing Shanghai
a week later.
I guess Japan a week forward?
Oh, Japan a week forward, yeah. But then you're not going to start the season with a triple header, are you?
Yeah,
why not?
Well, bring Australia an extra week forward, I don't know.
Something like that. But whatever. They're doing it for climate reasons, so I'm sure, why not?
And let's not forget, we've got a 2-week break in the middle of the European stretch as well, in the summer, which is ridiculous, but there we are. But anyway, Jamie, our little first ramble of the episode out of the way then. Let's get straight into qualifying. It was a fairly predictable affair, I guess. Kind of the big talking point, wasn't it, or the weird talking point early on, was, and I still don't really know if we've got the full details of this, but what on earth was going on with Isaac Hadjar's seatbelt? Because it was causing him genuine pain.
I think it was giving him a lot of tension in a very unpleasant area for any males out there who are listening, which is probably the most of you. It sounds like,
let me get the stats.
Slightly groin area related, and was basically having to drive through an awful lot of pain. But they seem to find some sort of fix for Q2. But it was all.
Did
it was
they
very,
cut it off?
Well, hopefully didn't. Not his, but maybe the seatbelt. I don't know what they did, but regardless, he was able to drive through the pain, which is, I've been on the record and said I'm not a huge Isaac Hadjar fan, but he's doing all right. I'm
all
warming to him.
All of the rookies so far, have done pretty well, I would argue. Jamie, you'll be pleased to know 98.4% of our viewership is in fact female. Male, even, I should say.
Shout out to the 1.6%. Glad you're here.
Jamie, we will let you know now. Jamie is in fact single. If you're interested.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah, I mean, this is going to be a talking point a bit later on in the show, but I think it's safe to say, isn't it, that all the rookies are doing pretty well at the moment. Someone that isn't a rookie, though, Lance Stroll, he drove like a rookie, like he does quite often, out straight away in Q1, a second and a half off pole.
He got a gust of wind in the corner before Dunlop, to be fair to him.
Oh, but, behave.
But no one else got a gust of wind, so you know.
Exactly.
He did just Stroll drive into gravel.
Again, not really too surprising that they got knocked out. Esteban Ocon, pretty disappointing by him, and obviously Jack Doohan as well, after his mishaps in FP2, obviously basically had no fast running until he jumped straight to qualifying, so it was also out in Q1. I know we mentioned it in Australia, Jamie, but can we talk about the fact that Behrmann, in every single qualifying session, apart from Shanghai when he got screwed over, has been quicker, and normally comfortably quicker than Ocon? Over
yeah,
one lap especially.
I was gonna like say it later in the session and in the podcast, sorry, not the session, but yeah, Behrmann's doing really, really solid, and Ocon is no fool. He's a solid driver, but Behrmann at 18, is he 19 now, Ollie Behrmann, or 18 still? But
19, I think. Yeah,
as a teenager to come into the sport, and I'm a Hulk fan. Last year, Behrmann in the two qualifying sessions together. Was it 1-1 or 2-0 to Behrmann in quality? I don't know, but that
was 2-0 in the end.
That was a draft in, and his quality pace is clearly there. I it's a shame for him that Ocon got the headline result in China, but Behrmann started super well, really, really
and
well.
I think, again, it just goes, because like you said, obviously neither of us are Esteban Ocon fans, but he's not a driver that kind of doesn't deserve to be in the sport either, is he? You know, he is
no.
good enough to be there easily.
Yeah.
And obviously, again, you look at it and go, well, Behrmann finished like 14th in F2 last year. Obviously, got a little bit screwed over missing a couple of races to compete in Formula 1. But again, we can continue to push just how broken Formula 2 is at the moment.
You know, what would as well. What would Paul Aaron be doing if he was on the grid? Who knows?
Well, no, this is the whole point. F2 is not a reliable metric anymore.
Yeah.
So genuinely, nobody knows.
Genuinely, yeah.
It's so stupid, so stupid. Q2, though, again, not really too many surprises. I guess the big surprise actually in Q1 was obviously the fact that Tsunoda made it comfortably through into Q2, obviously in his first Red Bull outing, and then immediately went slower than Lawson in Q2 and ended up out alongside him, Alonso, Gasly and Sainz. So
yeah.
that second Red Bull seat is still cursed.
And I feel for Tsunoda because... yeah, the pace in practice, everyone was hyping him up. You know, he wasn't far off Max. But this is just Max, isn't it? He always goes super slow in practice and he gets to qualifying. It's a bit like what Hamilton used to do at Mercedes back in the day. Was like, he would just turn it on and suddenly he's like right at the front where you look nowhere. And Tsunoda,
yeah.
Tsunoda was pacing with Max and then you get to quali and maybe he messed up his last run. Because Q1, I think he was like 8th or something. He wasn't
he did mess up his run.
He didn't scrape through Q1. It was quite comfortable. But then Q2 came along and he's literally last. He's 15th. So, yeah, it's a shame for Tsunoda. The good thing for him was I felt like he was still in the V car because that white Red Bull. So I couldn't, you know, felt like there were four of them. Maybe that's why Max won. Spoilers.
Well, because he's been given the V car. Obviously, it wouldn't surprise me at this point. I mean, yeah, like I said, it was disappointing for Yuki, wasn't it? And I think the other big one, of course, obviously, was the fact that, yeah, Lawson went out alongside him. But again, like we mentioned... and, I mean, it's a bit of a preview for the rest of the show, isn't it? Isaac Hadjar, neither of us rated him coming in, but he is cooking in that
he's doing really well
as well.
Really, really well. I actually think, the Melbourne crash on the formation lap was obviously a massive low point, but I think that's kind of helped him in a way because he seems
but
to have his head screwed
like
on.
A distant memory already.
Yeah. And he seems to have, like, you know, he's doing, for instance, has had... many incidents in the first two races. I think Hadjar has had that one, and then he got an absolute like roasting from Helmut Marko by the sounds of it, and he's really got his head screwed on since then. He's been very, very solid, very quick and quali, which I think is really important, especially with the way the races are going this year. In the dry, he can't really pass, so quali pace is a bit of everything. And
yeah, no, exactly. And I mean, he would end up P7 by the end of Q3. Both McLarens would mess up their first laps. It was kind of do or die for them. Oscar would take pole, Lando would take pole, but then out of nowhere, Max Verstappen steals it by 12 thousandths of a second. And, you know, again, I've never hidden it. I'm not what anyone I think would call a Max Verstappen fan. It was a very good lap by the Dutchman. But also, Jamie, I was going to mention, watching both onboards, that Red Bull looked a lot more drivable this weekend. I think they have figured out, whether it was just circuit specific or what, but I think they have started to figure out that car. Not to discredit Max, because it was a brilliant lap as well.
It was.
But they are starting to figure it out.
And both McLarens didn't put the lap of their life in.
No, both mistakes.
But that was absolutely out of nowhere. And I think the thing was that Max just was, because he doesn't have much confidence in the car, like, he obviously is confident, he's a very quick driver, but the car doesn't do what he wants it to, so he was driving almost within its limits in Q1 and Q2. He gets to the final lap of Q3, and it is just full send. So he said in his interviews and stuff, he was just piling the car into, like, turn one, turn four, like, the really on the edge, Dunlop, those kind of things. He was just throwing it in and hoping it stuck, and it did. So maybe this is, like, a turning point, and the car is actually doing more than he expected in a way, but it was an absolute greatness lap. I was blown away that he got pole out of that.
Yeah, like we said though, of course, I mean, both McLaren, I mean, Oscar dropped 0.3 in sector one, didn't he, and ended up less than a tenth out as well, so it was quite clear that the McLaren should have been comfortably quicker, but again, I think, you know, you can't count Max out.
Lando was a tenth and a half up before the final chicane, and Max just absolutely sent it and got pole. I mean, I think Oscar's theoretical best was 2.5 tenths quicker than Max's.
Yeah, about that.
So really, you know, it goes down. The door was left open by McLaren. They should not have left the door open. But
exactly,
the fact that Max put it all together in the last lap was pretty amazing.
No, exactly. And I mean, it's a bit of a weird one, isn't it, as well? Because we've kind of seen this in previous years of Max in the first couple of races, or Max and Red Bull. You know, I know we spoke about it after Baku, I think, in 2023, after Perez beat him in both the race and the sprint, of he really does kind of take those first few Grand Prix to just try different things with the car. And of course, what works at Suzuka might not work in Bahrain or Jeddah, of course, but just having that extra knowledge and being able to kind of take what you've learned forward will really, really help him in that fight, because it is going to be him versus the McLarens in that fight. You know, it's not going to be Red Bull versus McLaren kind of in that fight. And again, you know, as the rest of the weekend went on, you know, McLaren have got to, or at least the drivers especially, have got to just clean up their act still. There's a bit more that needs to be done.
And I think it really helps Max as well, is that, like, because Ferrari are a step back, and so are Mercedes, most of the time, I think Russell could have been in the mix had he got his lap together. But
well, he did a pretty good job in P5. Leclerc that was the impressive one in Q3, I think, as well, getting ahead of both Mercs.
Yeah, though Russell was second in Q2, wasn't he? So I think he probably had higher hopes than fifth. But I think because Max is, like, at lowest, he's going to be third, realistically, if he gets a good banker in. He can just kind of go full send at the end. Whereas the McLarens are fighting with each other. So, like, if they mess up their final lap of Q3, that's going to be a real inter-team battle. And then the team has to favour the one who qualifies first. Whereas because Max is, like, it plays to his favour in some ways, being on his own.
Well, I think you'd argue still one of his strongest seasons, when you actually look back, was actually 2020. Which, of course, was another year where it was kind of like, I'm going to end up third unless I full send and risk it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's how he, like, got pole in Abu Dhabi, wasn't it? When he just went for it, because he knew, well, it's last race of the season. This season's been a write-off for a long time, you know. Just gonna go for it. And he did.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Running down the rest of, obviously, our Q3. Like we said, obviously, Max would steal pole. Lando would line up P2 ahead of Oscar. Charles Leclerc in fourth. Again, like you said, obviously, it felt like Russell kind of reached the maximum of that Mercedes a bit earlier than everybody else could in their cars. So he ended up, obviously, well, both Mercs locking out the third row. Antonelli just behind him. Hadjar, again, like we said, P7 ahead of Hamilton. And then I kind of completely forgot, but obviously Alex Albon and Ollie Bearman had just obviously made it into Q3, because both of them just looked pretty good and well-suited around here. And spoiler alert, basically nothing changed as we went through the race. Mm.
Nothing at all. Any thoughts on Lewis Hamilton being outqualified by a V-carb as a resident Hamilton fan?
Ferrari had floor damage on his car that they picked up on after the weekend.
So he had it in qualifying and the race, and he didn't notice.
They believe he picked it up, yeah, in Q1.
How convenient. No, I don't know how true. I just thought I'd ring it up that Hamilton qualified eighth behind a midfielder, but I mean the Ferrari's close enough to a midfielder.
That Ferrari's
at this point,
basically
isn't it?
A midfielder at the moment, isn't it?
Yes. The race began Sunday morning. Sainz got a penalty actually for blocking Hamilton in Q2, so
he dropped down to 15th
on the grid, I believe. And yeah, that was the only change. But speaking of no changes, Max held the lead. Lando actually got a slightly better start, but I really liked how at the end of formation lap they both lined up like a flying V to go and just into each other off the line.
That could be like a cold shot if Lando Norris was anywhere near as rated as Max Verstappen is.
And if it was like the last race of the season, which it obviously isn't. But yeah, Max covered, got the inside line. That was that. McLaren still second and third. Absolutely no changes in the top 10 on lap one. The only changes, Alonso got himself up to 11th, I think, from 13th. Him and Gasly, very close, down the back straight. I thought Gasly actually made contact, but I think his wing was just flapping because it's an Alpine. but yes, that was really it. And that kind of set the tone.
Well, places as well, didn't he?
So did Bortoletto. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, Bortoletto it was, wasn't it, even?
Yeah, Bortoletto just went to last because he's like, well, I'm on hard tyres in a Sauber in 17th. I'm not getting damage.
and just did
the classic league race thing of just lift off and let everyone go ahead of you because, you know, not much hope for the dry race anyway. And the rain didn't come, which was a shame because after Saturday, all the teams are saying there's threat of rain, but sadly not. Not much really happened, did it? And I think Hamilton passed Hadjar for 7th. What about lap 6?
Which was just pit stop strategy, wasn't it?
No,
it was a DRS move, wasn't it? Sorry,
DRS into turn 1. And that was literally it. The top 10 did not change at all, apart from a lap 6 overtake with DRS.
Yeah,
and
wild.
Some races, Baku last year is a great example of a race that wasn't filled with overtakes, but was a great race.
Yeah.
This race, the cars have got too big for this track.
I think it's so important because I've seen a lot of people giving Suzuka stick for it. Suzuka, you watch that circuit in any other series, whether it's a Japanese exclusive or an endurance series or anything like that.
Or
Suzuka
like 2012,
is a cracking
for instance.
Track. It's incredible.
It really is.
It's fantastic. I still would love to see Fuji as well. I genuinely would like to see them both get a Grand Prix because I think Fuji is heavily underrated as well, or Fiji, as Jamie
Fiji.
Likes to call it.
Exactly.
But I mean, I it's so awkward, isn't it? Because the problem is, there's a really easy fix for Suzuka, isn't there? Of you give them DRS through one or down the back straight into 130R. But as Doohan proved, someone's going to cock it up, and there's just going to be a big crash.
I don't even think
they won't.
I don't even think DRS down 130R. I genuinely think if you straighten the chicane, that would probably help a lot because it gives
enough runoff. You could not put enough runoff there, though, is the problem.
Yeah, that is slightly problematic.
That was actually, Jamie, how it worked. I don't know if you ever remember on Project Cars because they basically modelled Suzuka entirely and then never got licensing for it.
Oh, really?
So that chicane is just a flat-out right-hander and it was awful.
Well, thankfully, I didn't play Project Cars enough to know that. But
no.
Yeah, the cars are just massive. And it really is a new Monaco, in a way, because the dirty air is bad enough through Sector 1 to split everyone by at least 8/10 of a second, usually. You get some slipstream down to 130R on chicane, and then the chicane is so clunky that you'll then split up again. So, you know, what
can
you do?
It's the other thing as well, of course, of, you know, as we've become more and more used to modern F1 circuits, you realise as well that even the front straight Suzuka just isn't that long.
No, and you're going into a high-speed right-hander. It's not like a hard braking zone where you can send it. You've got to be alongside, if not ahead, in order to make an overtake possible. So,
well, you've got to be ahead, basically, haven't you?
It's not like a Bahrain Turn 1 where you can send it from 20 metres back, is it? Like, it's a big shame, but it really was not a great race. But as a Verstappen fan, I still didn't mind getting up early for it. Had Norris been winning, I'd have been depressed, but thankfully not.
No, exactly. And I mean, to be fair, again, because this is why I made sure to explicitly say it was the drivers in qualifying, because it was the McLaren team that gave Lando probably his best chance all day, wasn't it? Obviously,
yeah.
That very controversial pit stop cycle, which did make me chuckle.
Not controversial in the slightest for anyone with eyes and a brain. But, yes, we had Max Verstappen. Actually, well, it started off with George Russell, wasn't it? Pitted a few laps earlier when he saw a gap. Which threatened Piastri with an undercut because the field spread was next to nothing. I think it really shows the Red Bull is not that quick. Because had McLaren been winning, they'd have been 20 seconds away. But
yeah, McLaren had a lot more pace. Everybody else, I think, was, again, fairly close performance-wise.
Yeah, so it meant that Russell was a threat to Piastri for third. So Piastri had to cover him off. And because McLaren have two cars in the fight and are not brave enough to deploy team orders in round three, that meant that they had to pit Norris the following lap. Otherwise, Piastri may have overtaken on the undercut.
Yeah.
Which, so Red Bull knew this. Red Bull knew that they were going to pit Norris, so they just pit Verstappen as well. Because they can't, McLaren can't risk sending Norris an extra lap because he might lose to Piastri then. But it just feels a bit tepid, that strategy, isn't it? There wasn't much bravery.
Yeah, it's. I mean, it's that horrible thing as well, of course, of, you know, it's, if it would have been me, and of course hindsight is a beautiful thing, you go, well, box Lando first, try and put pressure on Max, and then keep Oscar out there and see if he can make the overcut work.
Yeah.
Because there seemed to be basically no pace or wear delta on any of the tyres, did they? Apart from the softs would just melt, which we knew coming into it. But yeah, I mean, McLaren as well, again, they need to learn from Mercedes back in, like, from, like, 2017 on.
Even Ferrari with Kimi in 2018,
exactly.
Wasn't it?
Even Ferrari as well. If you're in a 2v1 fight, you box one and make the other go long. It's just what you do. And McLaren, again, all this ridiculousness about papaya rules and everything else is just ridiculous. I mean, the only other real thing to talk about, wasn't it, was out of the three in the second half of the race, Piastri, for a lot of it, looked faster than Lando. You know, again, why don't they do what a Mercedes used to do and say, right, let Oscar by. If he can't get past him, you get the place back.
To be honest, that's all a bit of a fad at this circuit. I don't think Piastri...
I don't think he could have, but what he could have tried to do is take 10 laps trying to absolutely wreck Max's tyres as well, trying to just push him on and then let Lando by again. Lando float 9/10 back in the DRS range or something.
You're fighting a losing battle there, really, aren't you? I don't think that was worthwhile. What we didn't talk about was the pit exit, because that was, like, the only bit of drama throughout the entire race.
But again, if you had eyes, it wasn't was it?
Yeah. You basically
Lando didn't speed. Max just obviously, you know, completely within his rights, just squeezed him out.
Took his line. Yeah. Took his line. I did like the very, very subtle look at his mirrors and, you know, dashed the wheel to the right ever so slightly.
You could see it from here.
But
again, it's that whole thing as well, which annoys me with Lando Norris, that I know I've moaned about before, of, you know, Max obviously said, you know, I didn't see him there. He should have done a Juan Pablo Montoya go, you have to be blind or stupid not to see him there. Like, it's just the fact Lando was, you know, I don't know if you saw in the post-race interview, but Lando went, I just wanted to mow the grass as well. Yeah, they're going, no, at least try and give
yourself
some kind of fight. He's all pally-pally,
isn't he? Yeah.
He's too pally-pally still with him. If you want to get under his skin, which
I don't think Lando needs to change who he is, but he could have at least...
I think he does. Not just for that, just generally.
Well, he could have at least been like... been honest with it almost. Instead of making jokes, be like, well, you know, I had a chance, I went for it, and if I was in Max's position, I'd done the exact same thing. So, you know, still being honest, but not being like, you're not on Max's side in that way.
Exactly. That's, just what I know. He's just always there going, oh, I still want to be Max's friend.
Yeah.
You kind of go, but if it was the other way around, Max would absolutely not care for a second
about maintaining your friendships, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Though Max's attitude to the media I love, because he's just so no-nonsense. He just does not care at all.
No, but... Exactly. But, I mean, I think it's Crofty was saying, I don't know whether this is true or not, but it's the first time ever on a permanent circuit the top six finished in exactly the same order as they started. So not like a Monaco.
Really?
Basically. Apparently.
I doubt that's true, but it might be. I didn't hear him say that because I tried my best not to listen to the Sky commentary this weekend with Jack Villeneuve on it.
Crofty and Villeneuve together was a lethal, especially for an early morning Grand Prix, was a lethal combo.
I think I could reel off every other person who's ever been employed by Sky Sports and they would have been a better co-commentator. Like,
I genuinely think we could have done a better job.
Give me Anthony Davison and Karen Chandhok. They're great. Like, give me Naomi Schiff. Give me Bernie... But not Bernie Sanders. Just... He's the KFC guy, isn't he?
Bernie
Collins.
No, I think genuinely Bernie Sanders is a great show for that. I mean, just give us Jenson Button, man.
Yeah, Button, Rosberg. He does good commentary. Anyone. Yeah. Anyone else.
Well, Button, not Rosberg so much. But
give me X-Matty G. He did practice once. I would have taken that.
He did... I don't remember this.
No, he did F1 TV, sorry. He didn't this
guy. Oh, right, okay. Right, okay. Okay. I was going to say... but I mean, yeah, I mean, let's just do it, Jamie. Race rating, I'm giving it a 1. It was awful.
No, it's better. It wasn't like Monaco last year. There was a little bit of
it.
I'll give it a 2. But
I think if we end up with a race worse than that, that isn't Monaco, is...
I am biased because Max won, so I'll give it a 2.5.
Yeah. Fair enough. So easily the worst rated race so far of the year.
Oh, yes.
Which is not surprising.
Yes.
Driver of the day? There's a few actually to shout out here, isn't there? Because although there wasn't a lot that happened, Verstappen obviously did a very good job. Antonelli, it became the youngest ever race leader in Formula One history.
And fastest lap.
Shout out to him. Sorry?
And the fastest lap for Antonelli.
And fastest lap, yeah, he did. Like we said, Hadjar did a really good job. Behrman did a really good job. I think if you're going to shout out those two, you've got to say Albon did a really good job.
So did Alonso, but he finished 11th, so no one will care. But that Aston was not good, so...
Well, that Aston Martin just isn't good, is it?
Yeah, I do think Alonso...
The thing is, if you're
good.
Fernando Alonso right now, you must be thinking, oh, I might as well just call it a career. But you know full well, if he does call it a career, next year they'll be winning. And if he doesn't, next year that car will be terrible.
That's the one bit of, like, a shred of hope that he's hanging on to, isn't it? He might as well just check out of this year. It's almost like, you know, let one of the rookies have that seat and then Alonso can just have it back when Newey's designed the car next year.
Well, basically, it's what happened to Stroll last year, wasn't it? It was Alonso after Japan last year had already scored more points than Lance did all year.
Yeah. Crazy.
At least Alonso's in the World Championship now. I guess
he
that's
is.
Good.
He is classified, which is good news. Yes, Max Verstappen might as well be in the constructors at this point because obviously Tsunoda did not score points at his home race. And I do feel for him because, you know, he was probably quite looking forward to driving the V car around Suzuka.
I think he would have been in the top 10, wouldn't he?
Yeah, easily. Yeah. Yeah. But that does take me nicely onto the quiz because...
Oh, no.
This is going to be tenuous, but... Yuki Tsunoda, did you see the stat that he has equaled the most race starts for a Japanese driver?
I did not, actually.
That, do you know who he equaled?
I would assume Sato?
You are correct.
No.
It was Takuma Sato.
Oh, it was Takuma Sato. Fair enough.
Yeah, something like 80 races.
97 or something?
Yeah, 80 to 100. I can't remember exactly how many. But Takuma Sato, this is where... I need you to verify me because I think he's won the Indy 500. Has he not?
He has.
He has. There we go. This
he
website
has
I use,
I believe.
He has.
2015 and 19.
Takuma Sato, according to this article I googled, was not on the list of F1 drivers who have won the Indy 500, but there were some other drivers on the list, and I count 13 drivers to have raced in F1.
Yep.
In a non-Indy 500 race, so all the 50s.
Right, that was going to be my first question, yeah.
So we're talking, they've got to have done a Formula One World Championship race that was not the Indy 500.
Okay.
And have won the Indy 500. And you're going to have a minute and a half.
How many are there? Sorry, and is this excluding Sato, is it?
No Sato, there are 13 others.
So I'm basically just trying to name Indy 500 winners that have raced in F1.
Exactly that. And you time starts now, but my phone's over there, so I'll do it by...
Jim Clark.
Yes.
Graham Hill.
Yes.
Juan Pablo Montoya.
Yes.
Obviously, Marcus Ericsson's won it twice.
He has.
Fernando Alonso hasn't. Fittipaldi, Emerson.
Yep.
Oh man, this is so difficult.
There are some other names on here you'll definitely know.
Yeah, this is the annoying bit. Jacques Villeneuve? Did he?
Yes.
No, he
did. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he did win Indy.
Year before he debuted in F1.
Yeah, I could, because again, this was, you won't know anything about it, but this was the awkward IndyCar Champ Car split. Mansell, I believe, won the Indy 500.
No, he didn't.
He just won the championship, didn't he? Not 500.
You got 20 seconds.
Michael Andretti?
Close.
Mario Andretti?
Correct.
Yeah. Phil Hill?
No. 5 seconds.
No idea.
Lucky. Only 5 left. So you got 8 out of 13. Not bad.
Honestly, I'm happy with that.
Not bad. One of them raced in F1 in 2015.
Alexander Rossi. I knew I was forgetting a modern one.
There you go.
Yeah.
The rest of them are from old times. But one of them, American driver in F1, got a bunch of podiums, I believe.
Oh,
pretty solid.
Dan Gurney?
No. I'm thinking like 70s, 80s, probably.
Yeah, no, I know who you're thinking of as well, because he did loads of F1 races, didn't he? Because he was an answer for you a few months back.
He was.
Oh, man. Will I remember it? Probably not.
Eddie Cheever?
Yes, of course.
And then the other ones I hadn't heard of, but you might have done. Danny Sullivan?
Yeah, I do know the name. I wouldn't have guessed it, but I do know the name.
Mark Donoghue, also 60s.
I definitely know Mark Donoghue.
And then probably the most difficult one is Roger Ward, who
won
Indy 500 twice in the 50s and only raced 2 other races that were counted as club championship races in F1. So that was going to be quite hard.
They were both also in America.
Yeah, Sebring and something else.
There you go. Honestly, I'm staggered. I got 8, to be honest.
That was pretty good going. Well done. I played to your strengths because I know nothing about F1.
I was going to say, you would not stand
plenty
a
about
chance.
F1, nothing about anything else.
Yeah, at least I've got a little bit of knowledge about some of the other series as well.
Exactly.
And I tell you what, the Indy 500 every year is far more interesting than that Japanese Grand Prix was, which brings us back nicely. Have we only got to do predictions recap? Is that it? Have we done everything?
Did you say a drive for the day? I'm going to give it to Verstappen.
I think, Verstappen's fair. Even I'll give it to him for a change.
There we go. Especially for qualifying, because that lap was insane. And, you know, if they had 2 mid drivers, even if it was Sainz instead of Verstappen, next to Tsunoda, for instance, people would think this Red Bull is like 4th or 5th quickest, which is just hilarious.
I would genuinely be intrigued to know if you brought Albon back now, what it'd be like.
I mean, he still wouldn't beat Max, that's for sure.
No, obviously not, but would he be able to
I think he'd be a lot more confident than he was back in 2019-20.
Exactly. What was I going to say? That was it. You gave me a fun stat, didn't you, over the weekend? That Verstappen joins a very exclusive club of drivers to have won in 10 consecutive F1 seasons.
True.
Can you name the others?
I think I can. I saw the stat. So Schumacher and Hamilton
both
won 15 in a row, which is mental. Yeah. Verstappen's on 10. I believe Prost is on 10.
He is.
And I don't think it's going to get any more than 10 for Alan Prost, to be fair.
Probably not, no.
And was that it? Or was Senna in there too?
Senna had 9. And of course, obviously, probably would have won a race in 94.
Yeah.
And probably been able to. I think Senna honestly could have got close to 15 as well, to be honest.
Yeah. I mean, Michael Schumacher, similarly, could have got another 2 had he not been forced out by Ferrari. But
he also probably shouldn't have had one in 2005.
True.
Swings around about there.
Yeah. Yeah. And Hamilton could have easily been on 18 by now had he actually got his act together in 22 and 23. But
if you can name me a genuine race where he had a fair shot of winning in 23,
Brazil?
I'd love to hear. Exactly.
23 is fair enough. Zandvoort?
Exactly.
Maybe?
Oh, behave.
Sainz won a race.
Hey?
Sainz won a race.
Sainz was the only non-Red Bull 2 winner race.
Still did it. There you go.
Fair enough.
Yes. Where do you think Red Bull go from here if Tsunoda keeps on doing what he's doing at the moment? Obviously, it's been one race.
He did a better job than Liam, which I think is the important bit. I mean, it won't be long, surely, before they give Hajar a go in there. But, I mean, you've got to get to the point. I would assume it's in their contract that if Red Bull call them up, they have to do it.
Yeah, you'd be stupid not to, because you're disobeying your bosses at that point. It's like, you know, in any job, if your boss asks you to do something, you're going to do it most of the time if you want to stay there.
I don't. Not if my boss says what to do.
Well, your boss, I'm not going to finish that sentence, but yes. Self-employed, interesting. is your boss technically Susan from YouTube, or whatever her name is?
She is dead, Jamie, if I remember correctly.
Oh, dear.
I'm pretty certain so.
Oh, I'm sorry to bring that up. That must be personal for a full-time YouTuber.
That took a very dark turn. Yeah. That's slightly alarming. Thank you for that one, Jamie.
Whoops.
Let's move back to the predictions recap.
Yes.
Just quickly.
Let's do that.
Because I think it's the last thing we've got to do before Jamie brings up more dead people.
Exactly. I'm currently 8-3 up going into the weekend. That's looking good for me. We naturally both predicted a McLaren on pole position, which is what should have happened had they been good. Yes, I went Piastri, you went Norris. No points all round for qualifying.
Nope.
Race prediction, you went very boring and said Lando Norris to win.
Yep. 1 point.
1 point. Oscar Piastri, second.
Yeah.
1 point.
2 points. 1 point as such, yeah. 2 points all in all.
And George Russell, P3.
I thought, honestly, looking back, I thought I said Max.
No. Neither of us put Max on the podium, which was a bit bold.
No, we didn't.
Yep, knowing Will for a reason. I said Oscar Piastri in pole position. No, no points. I said Oscar Piastri, race win. One point.
1 point.
I said Lando Norris, second place.
I hate you. You keep doing this all the time, and it's going to be a horrible year if you keep doing this.
2 points. And I said Charles Leclerc, P3. So no points for that. It did. I wasn't far off, and I was pretty happy when Leclerc qualified fourth, because I was like, you know what? A little Piastri DNF here, and I'm looking like second and third bang on again. But sadly not. But overall, that gives me 3 and you 2. So it's not that bad for you.
No, but it's still annoying. So I like to give Jamie a little bit of an early head start, and then I just absolutely obliterate him pretty quickly.
So that makes it 11-5 after 3 races.
Exactly. Have we got anything else to add, Jamie? I think we've kind of smashed through everything, because there wasn't a lot to talk about with that race, was there?
No. No, not massive.
Bahrain, obviously, this weekend. I'm sure we'll work out a preview show for that as well. Formula 2 and Formula 3 back as well, which I'm looking forward to. Mainly because I want to see Joshua Dirksen knocked off the top of the F2 championship.
I forgot F2 have done a race already.
Yeah, and F3.
Wow. Yeah. I guess it was Melbourne, wasn't it? So he didn't watch any of it because it's all at silly o'clock.
I watched it back again, luckily. It was mainly safety cars.
Yeah, doesn't surprise me.
There's that. It's great when you watch it back, because obviously you can skip all the safety car laps, which is fantastic news.
True. Good stuff.
Yeah, wonderful. Thank you all, as always, so much for listening. If you have enjoyed, please do make sure to leave a like. Get yourself subscribed. We're still trying to hit 1K subs on the channel as well at the moment. And Jamie and I will be back hopefully at some point later on this week, if his internet continues to kind of survive, ready for the Bahrain Grand Prix.